You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
It can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing, waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you can feel a bit tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Well, don't. Ever. Trains are often going faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is just a crunched hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, better not even think about that. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't stop even if it sees you. The result is disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you just need to remember one thing. Stop. Trains can't.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto, and him, Robbie Earle, reacting to match day 36 in the Premier League. Now, after this weekend, there's just two match days left, of course, a 38-game season. And where we are right now, Robbie Earle, the three main races in the Premier League is still not decided yet. Of course, the relegation picture is not complete yet. We'll get into that a little later in the show. The race for the top four is crazy weird. We'll get into that as well in the middle part of the show. But of course, we have an amazing title race, Robbie Earle, and we have two outstanding football teams that have shown us they're outstanding over recent weeks and now, of course, a long period of time. Now, that's where we'll start, Robbie Earle. Liverpool always expected to beat Huddersfield at Anfield, and it was 5-0. And a 5-0 where really they still had another two or three gears to go to.
5-0 at a canter. The first goal coming in around 15 seconds, the fastest ever goal Liverpool have scored in the Premier League. Just got them off to the perfect start, stopped the nerves. It's interesting that Jurgen Klopp after said he was a little concerned they scored so early, and he wondered whether it would take a little bit of the drive away from the players because they might start to think this is easy. But I think that's one of the most impressive things I can say about Liverpool, Rob, is that they mentally and in terms of kind of what I call Nick, like your physicality, your fitness, you're on top of your game, you're on top of your touch. They're in such a good spot right now.
They are.
They, as you say, they dominated the game against, I mean, Huddersfield are not a great side, let's be honest. But they're in such good nick. Couple of goals from Mane, couple of goals from Salah does either of them any harm, obviously with Premier League and Champions League to come. I just thought it was another reminder of how far this Liverpool team have come under Klopp.
Yeah, I think, of course, we know it's Huddersfield, but 5-0 is a pretty good, like, you know, destruction of them. And again, I think they could have played better. I think the outlining points here and the confirmation here is about the wide play of this club. Now, again, I've said this a few times before, that when you think about Henderson, Milner, Wijnaldum, maybe a few of those guys, you don't think of them being super creative. But when you've got fullbacks that as good as Trent Alexander-Arnold and Adley Robertson and what they're doing in terms of creating and crossing and assisting is stunning. And the wide players, we've talked about them all season long. I mean, we should keep going about it. Mo Salah, who now is back in great form, great confidence, and Sadio Mane again, a couple of goals each for those two. And I think I remember like a few weeks ago, Rob, we talked about this running and Liverpool weren't playing well. Remember we kind of talked about Liverpool got to play well again. Well, they are playing well again. And everything, you said it in the start, everything's coming together in a tremendous fashion where defensively, brilliant, brilliantly strong again. Creatively, excellent from the outside positions. Midfield, there's so many options there. Naby Keita doing great for his goal. And those front players, even with the Firmino not starting, they still look great going forward.
Absolutely. And it's funny, Robbie, you're just talking. I think news is broken from over in England. It's the PFA Player of the Year awards. And these are a picture of four Liverpool players. So Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson, you say they're both fullbacks who were in the team of the year.
Yeah.
There's Sadio Mane. And then there's Virgil van Dijk, who obviously has won the PFA Player of the Year. And he's having the awards. So I think, you know, to get four players in that team, and there's an argument maybe one or two more had an argument, Salah and Wijnaldum particularly, I think people would make arguments. I know you were saying that at least they should be getting an honorary mention. But the development of Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson has been as impressive a rise as we have seen. I remember 12 months ago, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and I think we all saw the talent, the athleticism, but I remember a couple of big games, Rob. There was one at Old Trafford where he got caught out of position, and I think a goal might have come. And then I remember in a big game against Manchester City, Leroy Sané got a big diagonal and he didn't judge it right and got in behind him and scored. And I think at that point, like, this question mark that he used to be a winger, and how's his defending going to be, and is he going to be that top level? Within 12 months, he's answered all those questions. Andrew Robertson was available from Hull City, Rob. I mean, every other Premier League club had the chance to look at him. Every other Premier League club had the chance to say. Nobody did. Liverpool, with their scouting system and with their understanding and their knowledge, decided his profile fit Liverpool Football Club. And what a choice that has become.
I mean, of course, what a choice. But also, they get full credit, but surely they couldn't have seen what a tremendous fullback he is becoming.
To have
an engine, like a crazy engine, first of all, to get up and down that left side all the time, to have a brilliant left foot with the quality that he has, to be smart enough to get in the right positions defensively, brave enough to make the right tackles. I mean,
nowadays, when you're signing someone like Andrew Robertson, and it'd be great to, you know, maybe the next time we go to England, we'll try and speak to some of the scouts or whatever. I would have thought they've got a record of what he's running from Hull. You know, his entries into the last third with his crossings things. I would have thought there's a certain amount of science and data.
Why wasn't he a target of any other club? Others might not have seen
what they saw. I mean, that's the credit. You know, why does N'Golo Kante turn up at Leicester and think, because you've got good scouts who understand what's required and understand the profile of the player that's required for the football club. Andrew Robertson could be a great Liverpool fullback for the next 5 to 10 years.
Just look at Liverpool now, Rob. And of course, they got the job done brilliantly well. They're in tremendous, as you said, Nick, earlier. Just let's look ahead a little bit here, Rob. Wednesday, Barcelona away.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days later, a couple of days of rest, they got Newcastle away. Then Barcelona at home again. And then Wolves at home.
Yeah.
Do we think, and let's put the Barca game to bed for a little bit. In terms of those remaining games now for Liverpool, I mean, they don't look like anything's going to get in their way in terms of winning every single game, certainly in the Premier League. No. Do you think that's...
Absolutely. People keep saying Rafa. Rafa doesn't play centre-forward for Newcastle and he's going to score a hat-trick. Rafa sets a team up that will defend, but he can't defend the attacking speed, options, combinations, intensity that Liverpool have, Rob.
Even after a Wednesday night, Barcelona away, I'm sure they'll run themselves into the ground. Yeah. They've got a little bit of travel, and then they've got to get themselves ready for Newcastle away.
And then Jurgen Klopp has to have a look at things. Does he decide just to Sturridge play a part? Does Origi play a part? Does he slightly mix things up? Absolutely. I don't think there's a problem. I think we're trying to find a problem because it's Rafa.
Well, no. I'm just trying to be realistic about
people are sort of
dropping
saying
points
that maybe,
in the league.
Will they drop points to Newcastle? I don't see it. Based on what I'm seeing with my eyes from the team, I just don't see it.
And also, by
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is back. We saw Joe Gomez come into the game. Shaqiri came on and played the ball to Robertson for the last goal, a clever little reverse pass. So wherever
Sturridge
you look...
could play, you know.
I mean, wherever you look now, Firmino... Is going to? I think it's going to be fine. I think that was just precautionary that he didn't start this game.
Milner could be.
Lovren
could be
played. It's just so injuries wise. Lallana, that's it. There's nothing. So it's a great way to be.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, we'll talk about. I mean, we've got plenty of podcasts between now and the end of the season. Yeah, but it continues that I marvel at how good this team is and how good a job the manager's done, and in terms of an all-round team balance, they are brilliant right now. Absolutely stunning right now.
They owe themselves, Rob, 97 points. Oh. That's what they owe themselves. They owe themselves to win the two games. And you know what? If that's the case, well done, Liverpool.
Yeah, and then you never know what might happen. Mm. But have no regrets.
Yeah,
keep this going. And we know those remaining Premier League games for sure. So then, of course, it went to Sunday.
Turf Moor
on Sunday. Mm. And the toughest, really, I think most people thought.
I certainly did.
City's last three in the Premier League away to Burnley. Sean Dyche has got his team playing great. They're in great form since Christmas. They had 12 points, Robbio. Just real quick on them. 12 points in 19 games at Christmas.
Yeah, the first 19, yeah.
That's half a season on 24 points.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's really relegation form. So full marks to Sean Dyche. Yeah. And this was never going to be a comfortable game for Manchester City, and it didn't turn out to be.
No, for 45 minutes, Rob, it was... Chris Wood had a great chance early in the game, about 20 minutes into the game, where turnover possession, things we talked about, maybe you can expose Man City when the ball changes hands. Chris Wood didn't take a good touch on the ball. If he had and had scored that, could have been so different. It wasn't a great spectacle in terms of football, which I think helps Burnley in the first half. And all of a sudden, at half-time, Rob, we're going in and we're saying, OK, we'll find out a little bit now. And Pep's body language was a little bit serious.
Nervous, a little bit fidgety.
Yeah, and I thought, OK. And there was a great shot, wasn't there, on the broadcast. We saw Pep almost just at the edge of the tunnel, just turn back to his players, and we don't know what he said, but it was almost like, OK, 45 minutes to show people we're champions.
They did it on Wednesday against Manchester United, where second half, I mean, United tired in the second half, but City's football was brighter. It was quicker. And we saw it. I mean, there was a point towards the end of the first half where we kind of chatted, like, we were thinking, this could be a draw, this. Because you just had a sense, and we've seen Man City before, even when they score a goal, almost feel like they sometimes need two to guarantee 3 points. And they got their goal. Of course, Sergio Aguero with that, kind of a weird bit of a weird goal. He strikes it, hits the belly or the midriff of Matt Lowton, who can't clear it in time. It goes over the line by just under an inch, so it's remarkably close. But after that, I still thought they looked in control.
Yeah, there was. I mean, Jesus came on for Sane. Sane was a little bit disappointing, Rob. Body language of him is not quite right. So Jesus came on that side and brought a bit of life and energy. Raheem Sterling played a little bit higher, but a little bit closer.
Yeah, played infield in one.
Yeah.
Which is, again,
a little bit strange. Yep. Bernardo Silva played in the wider position. But I think the same we've had, you know, City's football finds a way. It finds you out in the end. And it kind of did. It pinned Burnley back. They couldn't really break out. And then it was a matter of, could they hang on in the last 10 minutes when Burnley started to go direct, put a few balls in the box and say, head it away?
Let me just try and put some of our listeners, Rob, into the shoes of what it's like to play against a great side. Because we've done that, okay? We're not this City team, but other great teams.
United and Liverpool's just
on the kind of grinding you down. Now, I'll tell you what happens. In the first 45 minutes of a game, for the most part, you're up for it, you're ready, you're feeling great. Mm. And of course, a team like City are going to pop the ball around and you have to work and you chase around and you look at your teammates and you all do it. You track your runners, you pass people on, you close down, you run back, you run forward. Now, the more the game goes on, right, you might feel good. And I felt good. The strongest part of my game was my athletic ability. I could run all day. Mm-hmm. But my teammates around me couldn't. And the longer games went on against some of these great sides, I'm having to track more other people's runners.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, the players that aren't quite as naturally as fit or mentally haven't got the fortitude to make sure they do the right things throughout the game mean that they just slacken off. They won't track a runner. They won't track a 1-2. You know, they don't look and then positionally they don't get in the right spot. Mm. Now, all these things culminate in second half of games when some of the weaker sides, they just can't live with them anymore.
Yeah.
And City's football, they're asking questions all the time. It's all the time because they have so much possession and they nick it back off you straight away. So I'm not surprised that we're seeing some of these games where City in the second half come onto games, and particularly at this point in the season where teams are tired and more of them are like, I can't, you know. And it literally wears them down where their spaces are found and City find a way.
And when you play those games, Robin, we have played against, you know, some great Arsenal teams, some great United teams,
some Chelsea teams as well.
Chelsea, Arsenal, you know, they're great teams. you're kind of in the middle of the park, we play centre midfield, and you're shouting to the winger, don't you let me down, you go and run. You're trying to keep everybody, right. It's almost like you're spinning all the plates.
I wouldn't say the names right now, but I have them in my head right now. and they don't, Rob.
Yeah, eventually, if you're not on top of them. And the other thing that used to always get me in these situations was, and wherever you played, back in the old days, they'd usually have a big old clock somewhere on some of the stadiums. Yeah. I used to always look for 20 minutes. Big breath. Oh, we've made 20. We're okay in the game. Yeah. I'd look for 40 just before half time. Then I'd be like, if it's 0-0, come on, let's get it to half time. Then 70 minutes used to be my other spot.
Did it?
If I got to 70, I used to think, right, we can hang in here. We've
got
to keep going.
That's got a long way to go for me. I'd want to see it later on the clock than that.
70 minutes, and I think like we can.
That's still a long way to go, though.
It is, but I used to think if you can get to 70 minutes and keep those big teams down. You kind of got a rhythm. They've not got the reward. Sometimes they start getting a little bit frustrated. Now you just think, right, well, we can get some.
So mine was 80 minutes. So if I asked, because not always a clock, you start to ref, how long, ref? How long? Come on, how long, ref? And if he said 10 minutes or less than 10 minutes,
you're good.
I'm shouting to
re-energized
the guys.
Again.
Right, I can grind this out. And I'd say to the lads and stuff like that. And it just gives you a little bit of a final boost. But, I mean, that's just a little insight into what it's like at this level, with this quality, with this pace, with this...
What happens, Robin? Leon Osman said it actually, and I thought he was spot on. The very best teams, and it doesn't always look as visual, they wear you down physically and mentally. Yeah. Somewhere along the line, you'll get somebody who will just not make the run or mentally just switch off, and usually that costs you.
I just watched for mistakes in Man City as well, game later in the match. There were no mistakes. They didn't give up a shot on target. Otamendi came into the game and John Stones came into the game, Rob, in the second half, just to shore things up, extra height there to head balls away. I thought Pep managed it really, really well. And with that victory, my friend, you can't see him messing up now, can you?
And
there's
can't.
Two games left, of
Leicester
course.
City.
Leicester City at home at on home. Monday. Now, they've got more than a week's rest for that. Mm-hmm. Nothing else to focus on. Yep. Out of the Champions League. To get everybody in tip-top condition for that Leicester at home, which will be, Robbie Earle, a footballing game, a little bit of space out there, won't it?
And I think suits City. A footballing game, Manchester City win, Rob. Leicester were decent today against Arsenal. We talk about Arsenal and what they didn't do.
They'll offer a threat
with Jamie Vardy over the top, Tielemans and Harvey Barnes and people. But there's another level, Rob. I'm saying, can they, at the back, Johnny Evans and Harry Maguire, can they handle the speed and movement of the City team?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced.
And then they've got Brighton Hove Albion away on the Sunday Championship Sunday
win,
on May the 12th.
Win.
That is a win. So, I mean, it's we're not going to get too far ahead of ourselves. No. They might win 14 games, Rob, to get to a point of 98 points. Just too short of last season's amazing 100 points. Now, again, we're not there yet and we shouldn't get too far out of ourselves, but you know, just when we thought they might drop something, they get the victory 1-0.
Absolutely. And as we've said before, I said on the broadcast, these are not a top six this season. These are top two.
Yeah.
But let's stop putting six teams into category because they're big names and they're biggest clubs. These are top two and there's four that chasing him, Robbie Musto. And the four that chase him are absolute miles away.
Well, let's do it. Let's talk about the top.
We'll talk about those after. We're going to get a quick break for our sponsors. We're going to have a word from our sponsors. We'll take a break and then we'll get to it. We'll get to that race. Oh, I don't even know. That slow race to the top
tripping
four
up.
Right.
Absolutely.
After this.
Don't take a chance of being stranded. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and get your battery tested. It's free of charge and one of the many services available if your battery needs to be replaced. The professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Okay, Robbie Earle, so the race for the top four. We alluded to it a little earlier there that none of the teams seem to want to take control of this. They're all spluttering along. They're all limping over the line a little bit. Now, the first team that we want to talk about, of course, we know have a huge Champions League final on Tuesday against Ajax at home, Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium. They fell at home 1-0 to West Ham United, Rob. Now, was it purely a matter of this team and squad are kind of exhausted. We know there's new additions. Mm. Harry Kane was not in the game. Are they struggling just to keep really energetic on all fronts?
I think that might be a bit too simplistic, Rob. I thought for the first half of the game, I thought they played reasonably well. They created good chances. Alderweireld, I thought, summed it up after the game, said, well, we would dominate possession, didn't take our chances. And when you don't in this league, and West Ham are made of sterner stuff now, got better quality on the counter-attack, you always run the risk. I thought it was a day, and whether people have arguments, I know some people say have been saying maybe Spurs look better, if not different, when Harry Kane doesn't play. There's more speed, more mobility, yeah. Maybe running in behind. Yep. You missed Harry Kane's goals today, the weekend.
Yeah, I mean,
Harry Kane over the last three seasons gets you one goal there, and that might be enough.
Yeah, I mean, there was some good football between them. Dele Alli playing in the hole and Lucas Moura and Son combining. Eriksen's prompting from the right side of a diamond. But there are five first-team players out injured. You know, one of them being Harry Kane. And I just thought in the second half they ran out of steam a little bit, which we've seen before from them, and they run out of ideas a little bit. You know, we know that, what's the defeats they've got now? It's a crazy amount of losses they've had.
12 losses. And in third position.
Yeah, and most of those losses, Rob, it felt like this loss.
Yeah.
Where, like,
Wolves,
they just
wasn't it?
Couldn't...
They were winning and then they lost in the second half. And
where they just, run out of steam. They just... Yeah. They can't dig deep for certain matches, and that's just the
Maybe
way
it's
it
just
is.
Workload.
Given the squad.
Maybe it's workload. It is workload. That's based on these players, and where Man City can put in Jesus for Sané and De Bruyne and all these people, they just don't have that same quality. I mean, Vincent Janssen was on the pitch, Robbie Musto.
Yeah, I mean he finished with Janssen and Fernando Llorente. Up front. So it goes to show how
well they've done. They're on 70 points, and I still think, Rob, of the teams, I've said it before, for me, they're the third best team in this league in terms of what they're doing with the resources and results they're getting, and I still think that they're going to end up in one of those Champions League spots.
I'm not as confident. I think they will, but I think it's going to be difficult because of the reasons we've just said.
They've got Champions League
games coming up, Rob. They've got to get from Ajax, they've got to turn out for another league game. Mm. They got to, and then they're Ajax again, and then it's away, and then they have another league game after that. So with the squad, with the injuries, with
Kane... Away at Bournemouth is reasonably gentle, I would suggest.
After Ajax at home
and Bournemouth away is not the worst place to go on Saturday. It's an early start, which might not help, but I think I prefer one of those. And
I'll tell you what, given this loss to West Ham, they'd be very happy how the other teams are doing in this race for the top four, because they could
they're
be having
it,
a right panic up.
Yeah.
They could be having a right panic up.
One
about
more win and that'll do them, won't it?
Yeah.
You know, they go and win at Bournemouth.
Should we have a quick line on West Ham United? Because I think they deserve a line.
They do. Well, the line that we should be saying on West Ham United is if they could sort things out... They won't be too far.
What do you mean, sort things out?
In terms of bring some more consistency to the game. Kind of West Ham, a good West Ham, Rob, are a challenge for the best teams in the league. They lost to Manchester United recently. Felipe Anderson goal disallowed, and you know, we're probably the better team.
Yep.
They've gone to Spurs away, difficult in the new stadium, and won. We've seen signs of good West Ham that can be very good. Unfortunately, there's still the days when West Ham just don't look like they've turned up to me. And I don't know the reason why with that much quality now around that squad. So when I'm not saying if they can sort things out, they can. I think it becomes a bit of a mentality thing with West Ham. If they can start taking each weekend as important... I sometimes get the sense with West Ham, they like playing big boys and showing
maybe
how good they can be.
Maybe. And I agree that the inconsistency is frustrating for the West Ham United fans, but I keep looking back, Rob, at last season and how different they are now and how good football they play that West Ham fans want to see. And there's no protests about ownership or managers or players or stadiums and all this stuff. It's very different now. If I was a West Ham United fan right now, I think I've got an excellent manager, Mauro Pellegrini. I think he's going to bring me the football that I want as a West Ham United fan. Yes, there's some shuffling of the pack to do when you've got Andy Carroll. Yeah. I mean, Jack Wilshere's on his way back, and hopefully, touch wood, he's going to have solved his ankle problems. But there's so many players.
They've had a lot of injuries as well. They've got a lot of people, haven't they?
Well, they have loads, like a ton. Yeah. Yarmolenko, Carroll, Nazari, Creswell, Carlos Sanchez, Winston Reid.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on and on. So sort out that side of things.
And then you
shuffle the squad.
Maybe lean it up, make it a little bit more competitive, and there's a decent team in there.
They can be the best of the rest.
Yep.
Next season.
That should be their aim.
That should be
I would
their
say
aim.
Leicester City, I would say West Ham United, I would say Everton.
I think I think Wolves remarkable. I'd be really surprised if they can be there again next season.
Depending on what transfers coming in,
Raul
Jimenez, we know how Raul
Jimenez
and
people going to stay or not.
It looks like he's signed now, isn't he? He's permanently signed, so that's done. Jota's in good form. But yeah, West Ham certainly have shown us that, you know, given the right kind of summer, that they could be challenging for the best of the rest. Okay, so if we talk Tottenham, we talk West Ham, we have to now talk Arsenal Football Club, Robbie Musto.
So Spurs messed up, and now Arsenal
go to Leicester, and in the last three games, they've conceded three goals, 3-2 to Crystal Palace, I think it was, 3-1 to Wolves, and now 3-0 lost to Leicester. Two wins in, I think, the last 12 away from home in the Premier League. Flaky.
We've got to have a conversation,
flaky
we?
Is not the word. I mean, this team can't think of any kind of success if every time you go on the road, they don't turn up.
Are we too harsh on Arsenal? Am I too harsh on Arsenal?
Why, it seems what are you
that
saying?
It just seems for the 6 years that we've been doing the Premier League on NBC, that Arsenal seem to be a team that for me, and for us, I guess, that there's so much that looks wrong when it shouldn't be. Now, we're over the Wenger years, but an Arsenal team that plays at Leicester, that's 4-4-2, it sits behind the ball, it possesses very little. It's looking to play on a counter-attack against the Leicester side that used to do that. And they won a title, to be fair to them, doing that. Now they're the footballing side. They're the creative team. They're the one that are playing intricate football through the lines and little through balls and sometimes going direct to Vardy and finding ways. I just thought, hang on a minute, who's in blue and who's in red here? And I know that we've given credit, and credit's due for Unai Emery in certain situations to drag him in a situation to get to the top four. And then you think, well, go on then, Arsenal. Spurs are faltering a little bit. Chelsea look at times in a bit of a mess. They have been. United, of course, we know about them as well. And yet this was such a... Was the manager, Rob, trying to say, we've been awful away from home. I'm going to put a team out there that's just going to sit two banks of four behind the ball and... Let's try and grind out something.
Well,
if they need to grind.
I think you and you also alluded to, or somebody alluded, I think alluded to, was one of our directors or producers said, is he deciding to go all in on the Europa League? Is he not going for the game? And I wasn't having. Do you know why I'm not having that? If you play Aubameyang and Lacazette in one game as two front strikers, you're going to score goals. You're going to win the game. If you've got Mkhitaryan one side and Iwobi the other, you're expecting to have some ball and go and attack a team. I think Unai Emery is understanding his group more. I still like this guy. I still think there's a lot of good things about what he's done and what he's trying to do. I think it's going to take time. This needs a cull.
Yeah.
This needs a cull.
It does.
This needs a change. So we're looking back in a year's time and going, wow, this is nothing like the side that played at Leicester and got beat 3-0. And I'm saying... Good enough, there's a line. Good enough, yes or no, and you're one side of the line. And those that are maybes, that's a no.
You're absolutely right. And do you know what? We talk on this show, and we've done it all season, and we've done it for seasons upon seasons. Do you know what it comes down to, Robbie, or really, when teams, you know, when you sort of say sometimes with teams, well, I don't understand them. One week they're great, next week they're not. It comes down to one thing and one thing only. There's not enough good players there.
Correct.
Right, and some names think, and we all think they're good players, okay? Henrik Mkhitaryan did great things for Dortmund in the Bundesliga. He's not a great player in the Premier League right now. Alex Iwobi, I get he's young, and he's shown flashes of quality, but he's not a good enough footballer for Arsenal to be challenging at the top. No. Granit Xhaka is another one. Just not that good. Mustafi, Sokratis, Kolasinac, fine, but not good enough for us to sit here and look at each other, Rob, and say, Arsenal, great side. Well, they're going to be in the top. They're going to challenge for the top. There's not enough good players at the football club.
It's a great point. And the thing is, Rob, where we've got to try and aim this argument, and Arsenal fans may agree or disagree, the standard we're talking is what Liverpool and Man City are doing, because that's the standard now. It's not 70-odd points win you a title. 97 points this year might not win you a title. The standard's gone higher. And so the Xhakas and the Sokratis and the Mustafis might have been okay, or might be okay if you're not really bothered about top two places and you're thinking, we'll just try and find a way into Champions League. But if you're thinking about getting back to winning titles, getting back to challenging the top, then you've got a cult is the only way.
It is the only way. And then, of course, when you do that, you've got to have a recruitment department that makes good signings for the top two teams, because it always comes down to players. They've recruited the best over recent seasons and years. It's as simple as that. They have. Spurs are there. They've hardly done any recruitment, but they've done a bunch a while back, and they developed their own players. They've got a load of good players. They're a good squad of players. Chelsea, another team that have to, not maybe as much cull, but they've got to retool and get new players. Liverpool and City have had brilliant recruitment over recent seasons, so they've got squads of very good players. No matter what you do, how fit you are, for the most part, they produce good results, performances and results, and they end up at the top of the table. And it's kind of simplistic, but it comes down to that. And I always said that recruitment is the number one thing, and Liverpool City have got it right, and the others, apart from Spurs, because they've done none, you know, that's a different conversation, have not been as well. Man United is the biggest example. They're sat in sixth place right now, and we'll get on to them actually the next game. Have spent almost $1 billion since Sir Alex Ferguson's left, and the recruitment hasn't been good, and there's been so much wasted.
Absolutely, and there's no doubt attention to defence is the first point of call for Unai Emery. It's just going to be interesting to see what happens in the summer. You know, Arsenal have got no more excuses about stadiums, and the money's coming in, the revenue's there, the football club is set up.
Ownership.
Now it's about ownership. How ambitious
how
are you? How much
spend?
Do you want to spend, and how much do you want to be taken seriously? You talked about it. It was a big game at the weekend, the one that had the most riding on it in many respects. Chelsea and Manchester United at Old Trafford, a game where, you know, a win for Chelsea probably would have put Manchester United out of things. A win for United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said before the game, was imperative if United are going to get to Champions League. It was a draw, Rob, so I'm not sure. I assume Chelsea would be happy in that. And from Man United's point of view...
Positives. Start with the positives of Manchester United. I first of all, the midfield of Matic, Herrera and Pogba. Might not be the best midfield in the Premier League, but I certainly think it's a lot better.
It's their best.
It's their best. And I thought they started the game really well.
It's quite important to them, by the way, at the moment.
And I just wonder, and we'll get to the second half, but they thought they started really well.
Mata
played in
good.
The hole. They went with Rashford and Lukaku up front, which is absolutely fine. You like that, those two forwards. I thought Lukaku looked bright early on. Mm-hmm. The fullbacks of Luke Shaw and Ashley Young stayed at home for the most part, a little bit more than normal. Kind of started really well, and you thought, and we look at each other and we're like, this is more like it. Where's this United been for a little while? They get the goal, of course, of Juan Mata. Really nice build-up. Lovely football. Lukaku does a great job of chipping the ball over for Luke Shaw and pulls it back for Juan Mata. At that point there, you think, well, go on then. You know, continue that. But they didn't. And again, in the second half, run out of steam.
Yeah. Well, we keep getting this, Rob. So let's, you know, for a moment, let's just turn our attention to that. Are these players not fit enough? Because there's something I don't get, right? We go to training grounds, we see all the equipment, we see 30 staff, we see monitors, we see everything you can need in a football training ground. There is no excuse to not be fit enough. Absolutely no excuse.
Well, you made a good point on the show where I think I said, like, they just look like they're tired, like they're running out. They did it against Man City. They started well, and you think, this is more like it. Then they just can't continue it. And I said, you know, you're just not fit enough. And you talked about, well, really? Are you sure about that? Not fit enough? And you talked about another reason why they're not continuing.
And I talk from personal experience, Rob. And you've been there, and people, whatever level of football you play, sometimes you run with others. Sometimes you've got to go inside yourself. And how big's your heart, first of all? How big is it to keep going up and down? And I'm going to wear you out. You are not going to run past me. Then secondly, I always just think my gut. Some days I would feel physically sick. Because you know what? That was what I gave. I didn't have the skills of a Mesut Ozil, the passing range. But what I would do is I could dig as deep as anybody on a football pitch to get from one end to the other, to make sure I was with. I look at some of these Manchester United players and I don't think they really dig deep. I think they
because they really don't want to. They don't know how to.
Or there's like a fear. I don't really want to go to that place because they don't know that feeling. That's not a hunger. That's not a drive. That's not a desire. That's not. And to the point, Rob, where take fitness out of it for a minute. Take fitness out of this. And we talked about it a little bit off air. Was more disappointed in the last 15, 20 minutes of Manchester United where you're going for Champions League. This is the game.
I didn't get it.
I mean, that's nothing to do with fitness. That's about how many of those players looked like they wanted. It was the whole thing was based on winning a game to get Champions League.
There's nobody that watched that game on the TV or us watching it from the studio here that had the sense of, God, United are going for this.
They're desperate.
Flipping desperate for this. They want it. They know they have to win this game. The draw is a brilliant result for Chelsea and not for Man United with two games left. And I expected more desperation. Mm. I expected more from the manager. Maybe I expected Martial to come on later instead of Scott McTominay, though he's done well and he can get forward for midfield. I didn't get the sense of desperation, of desire, of determination, Robbie Earl, to find a way to win this game.
And that comes through me.
And the manager.
I know Ollie keeps referring back to Sir Alex Ferguson. That's what he had, Rob. He would make those millionaire footballers dig deep, go to places where they had to drag things out. We've just run the great documentary you get a chance to see, The Impossible Dream. Look how many times they were out of games or shouldn't have been through or didn't. But you dig deep and you find a way. I get this group of players collectively don't really know how to dig deep.
David De Gea, has been magnificent. Has been magnificent for this football club. Yeah. Player of the year, I think, for at least the last three seasons, if not more, being the guy that's done his job exceptionally well for this club for a long period of time.
Yeah.
He's in a bit of a funk at the moment. His form is not very good.
No.
And it's a little painful for me to think how costly that error was, Robbie O.
Yeah.
Because a 1-0 victory, or 1-0 certainly at that point, on top, in control against Chelsea. Chelsea weren't looking particularly great. Gonzalo Higuain wasn't looking particularly dangerous. I think they could have seen that game off if it wasn't for that mistake. Is that being too harsh on a? I mean, the fans love him.
No.
The manager loves him.
Rob,
his teammates might love him. But I'm just thinking of the cost.
Yeah.
If they don't look now that they can get into the top four for finances for Champions League and for attracting new players and trying to get this Man United side climbing back in the right direction.
It's not, and you have to be frank and we have to be honest and you know we've heralded this guy because he's been a brilliant goalie in the league. He's the one player part of Manchester United we've always gone. Well, at least that's sorted. They've got a world-class goalkeeper. You know, whenever we used to do the kind of pub talk of who would get in this team from Man United in there, De Gea gets in most teams
and
as the number
season,
one.
How many saves last season to keep United in the clean sheets
and the great defensive record? But you have to measure him by those standards, Rob. And by those standards, he is nowhere near the goalkeeper now. Is it something going on behind the scenes? Is it his own mentality? Is he overthinking things? You know, there was talk whether he should still be playing in the first team. It's a problem for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, by the way, because when you're that good and you're that high profile and you start making mistakes and it becomes he's making mistakes. It becomes Simon Mignolet at Liverpool. Yeah. You become Loris Karius, where the media start, the opposition start, and all of a sudden there's an avalanche.
Yeah, and of course, after this game, all the questions are about the goalkeeper. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course, is desperate to protect his goalkeeper. And he was asked afterwards about, was he thinking about taking him out of the firing line?
David De Gea was clapped off by a section of the United fans at half-time. Is that what everyone at Manchester United needs to do now? Get behind someone who's been a great player for the club?
Of course. David's been unbelievable for this club, and that just says everything about the supporters. And because we do support each other. There's no chance that anyone can blame him for losing many points for us. So he's been unbelievable. And today, yeah, he knows he could have had that shot, but that's football again.
Like you say, he's a top keeper, and I think you said on Friday about your trust in him. Yeah. Is it getting to the point, though, where the best thing for him could be to step out of the team and come back after the summer?
I think David is one that would like to play games. Of course, I'll have chats with him this week, and I'm sure he'll respond in the right way.
And as you expect, Rob, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's supporting his goalkeeper, deflecting things a little bit, saying that he'll talk to him. And quite rightly, it's another test for Ole. It probably one part of the Manchester United job, Ole thought, well, I'm okay for goalkeepers. I've got a bit of work to do in the defence and midfield. And all of a sudden, his goalie's throwing him in.
I know. And when you look at the league table now, Rob, Man United in sixth place on 65 points. Mm. Arsenal ahead of them. They've all played 36 now, by the way. So two games left. 1 point ahead is Arsenal. Mm. And Chelsea are 3 points ahead with 8 goals better in terms of the goal difference. Yeah. So really difficult from this point. Now, we know United's last two games are Huddersfield away and Cardiff at home. Mm. Very, very, very winnable games. But it's going to be difficult. And it's going to be difficult because Chelsea got a point. And it would have been so much different. The points would have been so much different looking at those two games for Manchester United. Yeah. Then we have all thought that United are favourites to finish in the top four. But unfortunately for David De Gea, that error and then United not being able to go on and score another goal. So it isn't just about David De Gea, Rob, is it? That the team didn't ask enough questions after that.
It's more than De Gea. I mean, again, I talked about Pogba being sometimes the attraction for everybody's criticism. It shouldn't just be De Gea because, by the way, they ran out of ideas. They looked a bit flat. Do you know what, Robin? And they do need to be in Champions League for so many reasons that you talked about: the money, the profile, attracting others. But in a way, they're not ready.
Well, they might not be ready, but if it's Manchester United,
of course they should be there.
They should be there. But I mean, wow, they should be there.
These teams who've gone in Europa League football and developed themselves and gone on. You know what? It might be time for Manchester United.
Is it one of those?
It might be time for Manchester United.
Is it one of those where, or actually,
it's
not that we needed, but it's going to make sure that this club looks at itself.
Correct, properly.
Looks at itself correctly.
Correct.
Thinks about how Manchester City and Liverpool have got to the very top.
Absolutely.
Structure, being on the same page.
Hasn't done Liverpool any harm, has it? Europa League for a little while and not quite being there and building it up again.
Restructure.
Somebody with some joined up thinking, Robbie Musto. Yeah. Somebody with a strategy that gives this football club a chance to get back to where it is. And if being out of the Champions League for a year is part of that process.
And
then
it means getting rid of players that you might not have been sure about. You know what, if we're in the Champions League, we're going to keep going. But it might be another cull. Mm. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now, whether you agree or not, is the manager. Yep. The club have got to get behind him. They've got to find a director of football that's going to aid him and assist him in the transfer market and finding players and making sure they sign them. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. But I think it has come where Manchester United right now, with these 6 seasons after Sir Alex Ferguson, nothing's really worked. It's time for an absolute rethink.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Quick word on Chelsea, because times that I thought second half they were a little bit better. I thought Graham Lasso summed it up perfectly at the end of the game. He said, well, Chelsea were playing without centre forward, basically. I mean, we can't not talk about Gonzalo Higuain. When he did run, he basically ran offside more times than not and stopped the play. He hasn't got any change of pace to get away from people. So there's no threat in behind from Manchester United backline who can get tight and stay high and not have to worry that he's going in behind. 4 Premier League goals for him this season is not the return that they were looking for. Chelsea still have a major problem in the centre-forward slot.
And we said that Mauricio Sarri, a couple of months ago now when the pressure was on, needed him to work in January. Yeah. He needed this signing because it's obviously his guy from their time together at Napoli, needed Higuain to come here and do well, and he hasn't done well. No. Now, remarkably, because the other teams in that area have had a real nightmare period, they're still favourites to finish in the top four.
Yeah, they're favourites to nick that fourth spot, which I think they've got Watford, haven't they, next time up at home against Watford, which is not an easy game, and obviously Watford...
They got the Europa League, of course, with Frankfurt, a couple of legs. They've got Watford at home and Leicester City away.
Yeah.
So, not done not and dusted
easy,
yet,
not easy
for
games
sure.
In the Premier League, no. Two teams who can play, and if they get their speed up, can give you problems. But you'd like to feel that Chelsea have got that. But Higuain is a worry, Rob.
I mean, he's not going to stay at the football club. No. It's still a problem.
Can he get him the goals? Can he do enough to get him through to this Champions League spot? I mean, that's what it's about now. And then rethink the thing once we're there.
Yeah, maybe he can. I mean, we checked with our researchers after about 70, I think it was 72 minutes. Yeah. I said, how many touches has Higuain had? I think it was something like 23. And it was the lowest of outfield players. So he is struggling to make himself... difficult to be a problem to defenders.
He's not effective at the moment. Doesn't have the athleticism and energy. Seems to be running offside. It looked a bit of a figure of frustration today. There was lots of his arms waving. The ball wasn't coming when he wanted. He was running offside. It looked like it's starting to get to him a little bit.
It's Mauricio Sarri, if they do finish in that fourth spot, would you like to see him continue into next season?
I would if he finishes fourth spot, because I think he deserved the right, Rob. And I've said before, and I haven't got anything personally against Sarri. I actually quite like part of the football that he plays in the possession.
But you think he's an odd match, don't you?
I do. I look at, and I'll be truthful, Klopp's an easier match because of his personality and Pochettino. But I look at Brendan Rodgers going at Leicester City, and I think that feels a right fit. Pellegrini, you took at West Ham, developing the football and that, it feels a rightish fit. He doesn't feel a right fit to me at Chelsea.
This is funny. You're talking like an English football snob.
Don't snob me up. No, I'm not saying... I'm
he
not
is
saying
different.
No, I'm not...
He doesn't look as cool, as fashionable as Pep Guardiola.
I'm not worried about...
He hasn't got the million-dollar smile that Jurgen Klopp, or the personality.
No.
He hasn't got the looks of Mauricio Pochettino. He's a bit weird.
Has Pellegrini got that? He's got none of those things,
aren't
he?
But a lot of those guys are the fashionable managers.
This guy's come from
Italy. He looks scruffy. He looks like Ragas Rovers.
I'm not... The least thing, because I snobbed you off a little while ago.
I'm snobbing you back here.
Yeah, double snob. I'll raise your snob. I'm not having a go about this. I'm talking about his football and his relationship, the way he works, the way he is.
What's wrong with Chelsea
court?
Knocking the ball around and possessing and dominating and being defending with the ball and trying to find a way with no centre forward?
With no centre forward, based on the guy said, I'll bring in Higuain, he'll get me goals, and it's failed.
It's failed, right.
With no penetration. How many times have we watched Chelsea this year and gone, all this possession, but there's no penetration? I'm saying Chelsea...
There's a piece missing with it, and I agree with that. The penetration part is missing.
Correct.
But a lot of the other things are all right. They have the ball. They don't defensively... They're not awful. They've improved. I think the football, even the last few weeks, have improved with the penetration and some better football.
Let's not forget this is the same guy who asks the young goalkeeper to come off his football pitch and the guy ends up having a tantrum. It's
difficult.
And that's what I'm saying. He's not a natural fit to me for Chelsea Football Club.
Yeah, I just think he's different and I don't
think... I'm okay with different.
He's way different, isn't he?
Hasenhüttl's different.
But I think Sarri's more different... When you say about not being a fit for Chelsea Football Club, I kind of get it, but I think, well, so what? So what if he doesn't? If he looks a bit weird on the sideline, he's making his little notes and he does some weird stuff, and he almost walks out of the stadium.
Dyche is different. I'm not different. Isn't if you're saying different, you're not picking my mean up.
I'm just saying he's not a fashionable looking. Cool manager.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about. Is Rafa Benitez a fashionable, cool looking manager? No.
Sarri is beyond that. So Sarri looks.
What about Unai?
Unkept.
Unai Emery
is a little scruffy, example. But not as scruffy as Mauricio Sarri.
Let's not go down this.
Let's have a scruffiness of a league table here. Oh. Anyway, I just want to get that out there. Like, I think he's a little different.
I think
he's controversial.
I think he'll do well.
He makes some stubborn ass decisions.
Get to the top
four.
But I
don't mind him.
Get yourself. He's earned the right to have another season.
Agreed.
Without top four, I think he's history, and somebody else comes into the football club. Let's move it on because down at the bottom of the table, it's got a little bit of interesting. One or two things sorted out this weekend. So Southampton with a 3-3 draw with Bournemouth now makes Southampton safe. I remember you were watching this game and you were saying it was
brilliant
like.
Game.
a brilliant game of football. Yeah. 1 minute that Southampton in charge, next minute they lost it. Bournemouth playing all kinds of football, breaking counter attacks. Then Southampton make some changes, change shape, get back into the game. I mean, by hook or by crook, Hasenhüttl's got them safe. And I think that's huge for this football club because
it is huge.
I like this guy. He's a bit odd, but I like him.
Yeah, it is huge. And you could kind of see improvements. We speak to Southampton fans a lot and we see it on social media, etc. There's a sense that he was making them better. Mm. But I kept looking at the league table and I'm like, oh, blimey. Yeah.
It doesn't show in the league,
does
it?
They didn't pull away from it. But I think there was improvements. The fact, and I made the point, Ward-Prowse scores a goal. Shane Long scores a goal. Two players that weren't always consistent goal scorers, but I heard himself, Ralph Hasenhüttl, talking about working with individual players and how they can produce better numbers, more assists, more goals, and I love that. I love that. Because I never got a lot of that in my career where a manager tries to sit down with me with a videotape room and say, I want to see this, I want to see that on the training ground. And it sounds like that's what he does. So I love to see a manager improving players. It's right through the team. I think Højbjerg from in midfield, Ward-Prowse I talked about. Yeah. Nathan Redmond is another one, Rob.
That numbers,
a different player. His numbers are better. So it was a game that Southampton dominated. Eddie Howe made a tactical change. They dominated. Ralph Hasenhüttl made another change. Matt Target came on. So their system was a little different. They dominated again. It was a brilliant game of football. But all said and done, that point, that 3-3 against South Coast rivals Bournemouth is enough to keep them in the Premier League, and I'm happy. I did have them tipped to be relegated at the start of the season. Of course, different manager in charge right then. Then, of course, with Mark Hughes. But the right change was made. And when he stepped into the club, to be fair to us, I think we said, you know what, this guy, I think, is going to save
him.
And he's done it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to him and the Saints. And hopefully they can start looking upwards and not worrying about relegation fights. It's been for the last few years. Team that are in the relegation fight, Cardiff, Robbie. I was watching this game, Fulham and Cardiff. I was really, really disappointed in Cardiff. Right. Really disappointed.
Well, tell me why, because I have my eyes on the other game.
Yeah, so having watched them against Liverpool and lose 2-0 and put up a good fight, and I thought, okay, Liverpool would have been a bonus to have got something from for Cardiff last week. It was a Friday night game, wasn't it? They got beat 2-0. But I was thinking, okay, you got two games coming up, Fulham and Crystal Palace, before they go to Manchester United away on their last game of the season. So I'm saying, okay, all things being equal, we go to Fulham, we get 3 points, and worst case scenario, we go to Crystal Palace, we take a point. We get 4 points, that heaps of pressure back on Brighton, who are not in good form, can't score goals. They go to Craven Cottage, Robbie Musto, and they were as meek, as timid, as I've seen them.
I mean
didn't lay a finger on Fulham. Ram Bobble scored a great goal on the 79 minutes, a wonderful shot, a little bit of quality that stood out. And then for 10 minutes, Robbie Musto, Cardiff had a go. They had headers from Sean Morrison.
They had
one off the ball from Junior Hoylett. They had Bobby Reid on the pitch. It was Rico versus the Cardiff team. For 10 minutes of throwing the kitchen sink at it, and they looked like they might get something from the game. But before that, honestly, Robbie, it was so disappointing. Neil Warnock must have been inside furious with his group, because the thing that's going to keep Cardiff up isn't their ability, isn't their goals, because the highest goal scorer is Camarasa with 5 goals from midfield. It's their spirit, it's their heart to play against, and going and having a go. And I've got to be honest, they really let themselves down to the point where they've still got a small chance.
Yeah.
With two games to go, it still gives them a chance, but I'm telling you what, they didn't off let themselves down.
Well, you're right. And Crystal Palace next at home, then the final day, Man United away. Yeah. They're on 31 points right now. Yeah. If they win both of those games, difficult, but not impossible.
Yeah, 37.
They can get to 37 points. Brighton and Hove Albion now are on 35 points after their 1-1 draw against Newcastle United. And Brighton, for their part, thankfully, try to play a game of football and attack in the second half. Yeah. They get the goal. And that makes it 1-1. So they are in control. But if Cardiff City win both to get to 37, then Brighton have got to win one of the games. Yeah. They've got to win one of those games, Arsenal away and Man City home. Of course, a difficult part of that is Cardiff to win both games. And we don't think that's going to happen, do we?
First of all, they've got to go to Sellers Park and get 3 points against Palace.
It's home, I think, isn't it?
Home to Palace, And then, listen, Manchester United, we don't know what's going to happen at Manchester United. We don't know.
Yeah.
If Neil Warnock can be going to travelling to Old Trafford on May the 12th with a chance of still being in the league, they've done a good job, and he'll be delighted.
Yeah, so it's not done and dusted yet.
No, still something I think to play on in all fronts,
which is great, by the way. Into the last 2 weeks of the season,
top two, next four, best of the rest, relegation fight. Should we talk about teams that we're going to see next season?
Let's talk about them.
Let's talk about Norwich City.
Not even too much about them from what we've seen. Yeah. It's tough to see all the games.
Well,
but
Norwich City were there not too long ago, wasn't it? They last in the Premier League 2015, 2016, finished 19th. Went down with Alex Neil. Was a decent team, and we thought, there's a basis of a team there.
Yeah.
Didn't do it first time around. Taking them a couple of years to get it right, but they have in the end, and they're back, Rob, and they've been probably the most consistent team in the league.
Daniel Farke, a manager that we're going to talk about a lot. Yeah. German manager. He was a former Borussia Dortmund, the second team manager, a little bit like David Wagner.
David Wagner and Jan Sievert,
who's the current manager of Huddersfield. Appointed in May 2017 at this football club. And what I've read and what I've heard has done a remarkable job. Yeah. He's 42 years of age. He's one of the younger guys. And it's a good story, isn't it? That somebody comes into the league and has an actual real impact.
Having said that, Rob, there were stories. Norwich had a little sort of iffy spell at some point in the season, and there was all these rumours that he's one game away from the sack. Went on this great run, and
right at the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, he didn't have a great start, but it's always the case. And congratulations to him back, and we welcome them back to the Premier League next season.
Sheffield United, established 1889,
proper old club.
We'll finish second in the Championship. Sheffield, a city I know pretty well. There's two major football clubs there, Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday, who I finished my career with. They're my last year of my career at Sheffield Wednesday. Two brilliant football clubs, a brilliant footballing city. And it's going to be...
they'll sell out every game.
They're going to give us some good times.
Yeah. We'll see some good scenes, some good noise. They'll have one or two upsets, and they'll be desperate to stay in the league. I mean, they were one of the originals, I think, back in the day, Robert, in the original Premier League.
They have a top flight title to their name, Robbie. 1897-1898 season, Sheffield United.
I think I remember that.
Won it all. So fair play to them. And four FA Cups as well, by the way. Yes. 1899. So they were pretty good around the 19th century there. 1902, 1915 and 1925 were the four FA Cups. So that's Sheffield United and Norwich City that promoted to the Premier League. Of course, we'll find out the final team, the third team promoted via the playoffs, which right now looks very, very tight, Robbie Earle.
Yeah, Leeds United, West Bromwich Albion, Aston Villa... And then it looks pretty much like one of Derby County, obviously Frank Lampard, and Tony Pulis's Middlesbrough. Your old Middlesbrough.
My old Middlesbrough.
Just on the edge of it.
Yeah, and I still think Borough fans are disappointed, expected more with Tony Pulis's experience. Derby County, crucially, have two games left and Middlesbrough just have one game. Yeah. They are on the same point. So it really is in the hands of Frank Lampard's Derby County. But you never know. Maybe my old Borough be back in those playoffs trying to get back into the Premier League. Now, just before...
Before we wrap this up,
something happened at Elland Road.
Yeah, it was part of the promotion race. It was Elland Road. Leeds were facing Aston Villa in magnificent form under Dean Smith. So a big game at Elland Road where Leeds desperately needed to win, although they were trying to get a big goal difference down. You know, anything but a win in Sheffield United, we're going to be promoted. Interesting moment in the game, Robbie. 73 minutes in the game. Jonathan Koja, a Villa player,
gets injured
just over the halfway line. He goes down. All the Villa players go up, hands up in the air. The referee doesn't blow the whistle, so let's get that fit. But all the Villa players hands up in the air, saying to Leeds, who are in possession, put the ball out of play.
Right.
And the ball gets transferred to...
Slowly to the left side of Leeds' field.
And then all the Villa players are over there pointing, and the player looks, his body's turned, everything
he
looks
slows
like...
slows right down.
He's just going to play it out. We get the treatment, the player can have a look, and then the game will restart. But Robbie Musto, as he looked to play the ball out, or as we thought to play out, he actually played a forward pass into an attacker. You can pick the story up from there, my friend.
He did. So then, of course, at that point, when his body language looked like he was going to play the ball out, at least four Villa players stopped. But Leeds didn't stop. They go for, they cross a ball, and Matheus Klich scores for Leeds United. and a fight in shoes.
Yeah.
Because Villa players are like, hang on a minute, we stopped.
Yeah.
Your player looked like he was going to play the ball out. And it was like, don't watch the eyes. I'm going to play it down the line. They scored a goal. Now, fights, red cards, shenanigans, John Terry, Marcelo Bielsa.
Head-to-head.
Yeah,
or...
massive reaction after this goal goes in. Now, at some point, Marcelo Bielsa decided, you know what, in the ream of sportsmanship.
Yeah, and the order of fair play.
Yeah. He shouted on to his players.
Yeah.
Let them take off.
Let them score. He shouted to his players, let them score, let them score. One or two players were sort of saying, like, are you sure? He pointed again, let them score. So Villa retake the kickoff from the halfway line, ran down the middle of the pitch.
With Leeds players doing nothing.
Just standing.
Apart from one funny centre-back who didn't seem to want it.
Doesn't really want to let Aston Villa score, but they do. So Albert Adoma runs into the penalty box, boots into the back of net, the goalkeeper lets it go in, and the game ends 1-1.
I think, first of all, in terms of the result, in terms of the playoffs, it didn't really mean a great deal in terms of the outcome was. It was a draw when it could have been a win.
But that didn't have any influence on Bielsa's decision, in fairness, did it?
No,
I don't think it did.
And that goes to how we should finish this and say, well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
This is the same guy who was accused of really cheating when he was supposed to be...
He admitted
spying on training, something he's done in Argentina for many years, and he learns the tactics and understands about the opposition, and he's surprised that other managers don't do it. And that didn't go down well with all people in football. Some are suggesting that that's going over the line a little bit. Yeah. That's not quite what we do here in England.
And to be fair, I mean, he's listened, he's reacted, he took the stick for that. And this situation, he made the right call, Rob, because, again, no rules were broken. You're not required to kick the ball out.
No, unless the referee blows his whistle.
You're not required.
You can play on.
But the difference is when a player practically stops and everybody thinks he's going to play the ball out and he doesn't, that's not on.
No, that's like deceit, isn't it? That's
really
like unsportsmanship, unsporting
behaviour.
Hence
the fight that we saw, which is not great.
And by the way, just let me show that Bamford goes down as if he's been hit by one of the Villa players,
Al-Ghazi,
who got a red card for that. And I'm sure that's going to be rescinded. I'm sure when the FA look at that, that Bamford might find himself in a bit of trouble more than the other way around.
Yeah,
but
Bamford goes down and dives.
We got the right decision in the end, and you say Bielsa comes out of things well. Leeds, let's just quickly talk about Leeds in the playoffs. Worries me, and I'm sure worries every Leeds fan who might be listening to this podcast.
Worries you because you thought they were going to make it automatically.
And Leeds is just drama. They've been leading the league at one time. They look like they might be the team to go up. Then you think, they'll be the team to go up behind Norwich. Their momentum's gone down. I think Leeds will be a club disappointed to be in the playoffs. I think if you look at Derby and Middlesbrough, they'll be delighted.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would love to see Leeds United in the Premier League because they are
a very, very big football club with huge
rivalries all over England, particularly Manchester United. Big support, big history of a football club. We'll see. Aston Villa, Robbie Earl, under my old mucker, Dean Smith, the manager I played with
him
at Sheffield Wednesday. Old mucker. They're on great form right now. John Terry's his assistant.
Yeah.
They're in great form. They go into the playoffs with
they'd
the
be favourites.
Talked about.
They'd probably be favourites,
yeah, so.
with the form and what they've got. And listen, it'd be great to see Aston Villa back. They're a great club. We'll sell out 40,000 people.
Absolutely.
If they come up. So, Robbie Musto.
Yep.
Like Marcelo Bielsa, we always do the right thing. That's it from us. But as ever, we want to hear from you, our listeners. So make sure you download the Two Robbies on Apple Podcasts, rate and review the show, and let us know what you think. So on a weekend when Liverpool show their pedigree with plenty of goals, Manchester City show their pedigree with plenty of grit. An Aguero goal takes them back of the table with two games to go. Look out for our Europoddy this week, May the 2nd, when Spurs take on Ajax and Liverpool travel to Barcelona in the Champions League. And we'll see if Arsenal and Chelsea can get it done in the Europa League semi-finals. I'm Earl, he's Musto, together with the Two Robbies. Thanks for listening. And it's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Night.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.